This episode of the CBS This Morning podcast is brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
I'm Charlie Rose.
I'm Nora O'Donnell.
And I'm Gail King. Hey, this is the CBS This Morning podcast.
Hello and welcome to the CBS This Morning podcast. I'm Gail King and you are?
Ellen Powell. Thank you for having me.
Ellen Powell, thank you too. Ellen Powell is here because she's written a book. It's called Reset, My Fight for Inclusion and Lasting Change. Reset Ellen Powell. So this is the thing, guys, who are listening to this. Ellen Powell was on the other day, and as often happens on CBS This Morning, where there are three of us talking, Charlie, Nora, and I, and we have a great guest. This time it was Ellen Powell, and we all have so many questions. And I felt it went so fast, and I read your book, and I thought there's so much that was left on the table. I said, Ellen, will you please come back so we can continue the conversation? And lucky for you, she said yes. Lucky for you who are listening to this. But by way of introduction, let me tell you something about Ellen Powell. Ellen, you write in your book, you were good at your job, you made millions for the company, yet you go from that to being called a pariah of Silicon Valley, the most hated woman on the internet, and you ended up filing a lawsuit against the company in which you lost. So that's the overview of Ellen Powell. And any one of those things, you go, wow, wow, and then you go, wow. So let's start from the beginning. Here you are, you're a Princeton undergrad, Harvard Law. Clearly, you're a very intelligent young woman, would you say?
Not so young anymore, but...
And when you were starting out in your career, what were you thinking?
Oh, I thought the world was my oyster. I was raised to believe that the world was a meritocracy, and if I worked hard and I really did my best, that, you know, I would be able to show results and I would be able to be rewarded for it and continue to move up in the ladder and achieve, and there was no limit to what I could accomplish if I just worked my hardest.
And you did. You worked your hardest. You did achieve. You arrive at Kleiner Perkins, and the position was a chief of staff position, which at first you were not really interested in. But they persuaded you to take this job. How? Yeah.
John is the best salesperson in the world. Mm-hmm. So he told me that this job was actually, you know, one that he was changing. It was going to be more senior, and I would be more senior to everybody else who was in, you know, the junior partner position, and that I would have this huge opportunity to see different companies. And if I didn't like it, they would place me into one of the top companies in a VP role, and it would be, you know, a stepping stone to possibly many other things.
But there were some red flags. Didn't your mom always tell you, always pay attention to the red flags? Doubt means don't. And so you had some red flags along the way, even in the interview process you write about.
Yeah, it was a pretty standard interview process. But as we went along, I met some of the more senior partners towards the end. And two of them asked me, like, who are your heroes? And I said, oh, this is such an easy question. Oprah Winfrey. I love Oprah Winfrey. And she's been through so much. And she has such a positive outlook despite all of her terrible obstacles. And they looked at me like, you know, like I was from another planet. They're like, Oprah? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh.
Well, they knew who she was, but I guess they didn't see it the way you saw it. And that's okay.
They didn't
okay.
see her as a hero. Okay. And they couldn't understand. They couldn't connect on that. And that was supposed to be an easy question. And for me, it was an easy question, but they were looking for a different answer. And, mm-hmm. you know, one of the other people that I think at that time I thought was really impressive was Bill Gates for all the work that he did with his foundation.
Did their eyes light up?
Oh, yeah. And they, you know, they moved up. They sat forward.
The little click, click you were hearing? That was Ellen Powell because she talks with her hands, as do I, and she was hitting the table, so you heard those buttons saying, I know you're wondering, what is that? What is that? So now we've moved the buttons up. Okay, right. So then you start talking about Bill Gates, and they say, okay, we get it. We get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and I pass that question, and we move forward.
And then the second part, the second red flag for you was?
Oh, I don't even remember. I think there were...
Well, you said that he said he wanted to hire an Asian woman. He was very specific about that.
Yeah, that was later. I mm-hmm. found that out later. I think there was another red flag. They said, like, we're all going to be a family, and we work together, and we're a team. And I went to the bathroom, and it was a mess. And I thought, there is no member of my family who would leave the bathroom like this for one of us. And that was a sign that maybe this wasn't really a family, and maybe that whole model was not working.
But he also told you when he was looking for someone that he wanted an Asian woman. I think he said he wanted a woman who he thought was raised by a tiger mom. Isn't that what he said to you?
Yes, who would work hard and imply that she would be subservient and would take all of these tasks and just perform and work really hard and be this ideal chief of staff willing to do whatever it takes to help him succeed.
Was that characterization troubling to you?
Yes. I thought, you know, first of all, why does it have to be a woman? Second of all, why does he have these generalizations around what women want to do and what women are willing to do? And, you know, is this really a role that leads to an investment role? If people are really thinking about this as more of a caretaker role, then they're not going to be able to see me in moving into more of an investment peer role.
Mm-hmm. When we should point out, we're talking to Ellen Powell, the author of the book Reset. You know, we were talking about Asian women because there was a front page article in USA Today recently, which quoted you extensively, had your picture. Ellen Powell, by the way, since there are no cameras, she does happen to be Asian. And they were talking about the difficulty in Asian women in particular. I think they called it the bamboo ceiling.
Yes.
The bamboo ceiling. And that it's often difficult. And you were quoted in that. What is your comment about that, specifically as it pertains to Asian women?
I think it's tricky because Asian women do get hired more readily than especially other women of color. But it is harder for them to succeed. So the women who come in from other
it's
races...
It's harder for Asian women to succeed?
At the highest levels, to get promoted at the executive levels. If you look at the research, they're the least promoted compared to other women. And so, you know, how bad can you feel for somebody not being promoted at that top level when other people can't even get a job? And then the other complication is then you start pitting people against each other from different groups that are all suffering and are all excluded. Mm-hmm. And you kind of break down the ties that should be binding people. Like, we should be working together to be included. Instead, you start having different groups pit themselves against each other, and it helps keep everybody down.
No, never a good thing, Ellen, groups pitted against each other. That doesn't work for anybody. But here, you take the job, because first you turn it down, but he persuades you, you take the job. And in the beginning, it seemed to be going very well, was it not?
Yeah, I got great reviews. I was seeing and learning a lot. I love working with entrepreneurs, seeing their companies grow, watching the products change people's lives. It was an awesome time. There were so many new things coming out in technology. The iPhone was brand new. The iPad hadn't even come out yet. So you could see these transformational technologies.
And you were excited about that. What exactly was your job? What exactly were your job duties?
I think the super high level duty was to help leverage John's time. So he had only so much time in a day. How do you make each hour most effective for him? And in the end, that meant, you know, helping prep him for meetings, helping look at a bunch of investments and see which ones were important enough for him to actually spend time on, mm-hmm. helping companies prepare for meetings with John. So if you're doing interviews, like, let's do some interviews together, and then let's see which candidates are suitable to actually have John interview. So it was a lot of prep work to make his time most efficient and most effective. And he valued his time at $200,000 an hour.
Mm-hmm. And he valued you too. He valued you too, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say that.
So when did things change for you?
I think.
And how did you notice the change?
In 2007, I realized this was a culture that I didn't really fit into.
So you came there in what year?
I came in 2005.
2005,
okay. 2 years later, I was like, you know, this isn't a great experience for me. This isn't how I fit in. There is this level of kind of machismo that I'm not a part of, and I'm not being included in everything, and the culture just doesn't seem to suit my style. So I'm more quiet, I'm more introverted, I'm more work-based than, you know, interaction-based. I'm not going to be the person who makes up a ladder by being buddies with everybody. It's more, you know, I hope to show through my work, and I didn't see that happening. And I also wasn't comfortable with the way some of the partners were treating entrepreneurs. I thought they were a little bit disrespectful, a little bit dismissive. Mm-hmm. And these were people who were, this is my life dream to build this company, and I'm coming to share it with you, and you're mocking me, and you're kind of making fun of me. I wasn't comfortable.
And you also liked, reading in your book Reset, you also seemed to like working with the entrepreneurs to help them fulfill their dreams. That seemed to be something that you enjoyed very much.
I loved it. It was, you know, these people were so much more creative than I was. They were, you know, building these awesome technologies, and they really were changing people's lives.
Yeah, they're coming to your company because they're trying to raise money.
They're trying to get the money that allows them to build out their product, to hire the teams they need to sell the product, to get the product to the consumers who would hopefully adopt them and tell other people to buy it, and then to create this awesome next wave of products.
So when did it change for you, and how did it change?
I think it was subtle at first. It was little things, not being included in some emails, not being included in interviews. And there was always an explanation, we were trying to do this really quickly, or there were too many people on the list, so you didn't make the cut, or, you know, we this person could only be interviewed in San Francisco and you weren't there. And there were just the constant excuses around why I wasn't being included in a variety of activities. And then one day I realized this was happening to the other woman too. And somebody shared feedback that one of the women was too talkative. Like, we gave her some feedback to talk more, and she talks too much now, so she has to dial it down. You need to dial it up, but don't do it too much, like mm-hmm. this other person did. Mm-hmm. So it was very much like, well, where do you want us to be then? I see the other people around us, and they're talking all different levels and all different amounts, and it seems to be fine for the men, but when it comes to the women, it was a very narrow line for us to walk, and it seems like nobody can actually walk that line.
But help us understand why you thought you should be included in the emails and you should be included in the conversations.
Yeah, I think the way venture works is it's very relationship oriented, and it's a lot of business conversations and it's a lot of email conversations where people are, one, making arguments and making counter arguments, two, building the support they need for their investments and for their decisions and to build these relationships with each other. And three, just hearing what the outcome is. So there's a lot in the information flow. And if you're cut out of the information flow, then you don't know what investments we're thinking about. You're kind of clueless and you can't participate in the subsequent conversations and you can't get your investments approved and you have the opportunity for people to take investments from you, and you just get lost in the whole process.
There's a lot in the social flow, is there not?
Yes.
These guys are all hanging out together. I mean, and I think just by the nature of a social conversation can often lead to a benefit in the work conversation. So if you're excluded from social activities, doesn't that also make it difficult for you to advance?
Oh, for sure. And a lot of the social and the business mix. So when I'm out running with somebody, or I wouldn't know, but when they're out running, they're talking about the investments and they're talking about, hey, I really want your support. I'm going to bring this investment forward on Monday and I would love your support in making sure that it gets through. And maybe it gets supported because they've been lobbied for it. So there's a whole set of lobbying that goes on behind the scenes that, relies on these social relationships and opportunities.
You also tell stories about the women being asked to babysit. That's what I thought was really egregious. The women are asked to babysit. They're asked to clean the board or take notes like a secretary would do. And these are high-ranking women that are asked to do these sort of entry-level positions that they would never dream of asking men, even men who were below your standing in the company.
Yeah, with less experience, who are new to the team or who are newer to the team, and who, even if you were asking them equally, that didn't happen. It was really the women were asked to do it and expected.
But you also tell a story about you even sought out advice from coworkers. What do you think I should be doing? Or how can I do this better? And one particular man in particular, I thought, gave you very bad advice. Do you think he was trying to sabotage you?
Looking back on it, it seems like it. I mean, this is an industry where people get opportunities through relationships. So whether it's an investment opportunity or finding a great candidate for a CEO or an executive level position or finding people to invest in subsequent rounds when the company needs even more money, mm-hmm. all that depends on relationships. And the advice I think that you're referring to was a colleague saying, oh, don't go to any of the conferences, meeting other venture capitalists doesn't make sense, it's not a good use of your time, you should be spending more time doing other things.
But Ellen, how did that advice make sense to you? Because I read that and I thought, that advice sounded so false to me and sounded like, here's someone who really is trying, who is not looking out for your best interest. How did that advice make sense to you when he said that to you? Oh, don't socialize, don't engage, just do your job. That on the face of it just didn't make any sense to me.
In a way, it kind of tied to my upbringing of understanding of, if you work hard, then you'll be rewarded, and it's not really dependent on, being popular. It's dependent on the work that you're
doing. My job and getting a good
yeah.
job.
And there's also a part of me where I'm an introvert. I didn't really want to go to those conferences, so this is
yeah.
a good excuse.
Yeah. Do you take any ownership at all in how you were treated or how your time at the company turned out for you? Do you
of
admit
course.
To any mistakes at all? Okay.
Yeah, I think I wish I'd left earlier. When I
Do
saw
you.
That the culture wasn't a fit, then I should have just left. And even earlier, I shouldn't have taken the job, right? I saw these red flags and I let somebody convince me to do something that wasn't really what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later, when I tried to quit, I got convinced to stay again, right? So I made the same mistake twice, which is you know, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, that's right.
You're supposed to learn, and I didn't learn. And I think that that is definitely on me. And there are some times when, you know, maybe I could have been more political. Maybe I could have tried to build more relationships, but I really was focused on, like, I think the job is about making entrepreneurs successful, on building great products, on building great companies, and I didn't realize how much of the job really was internally focused.
And you also write very candidly that you became involved with one of the with a married man at the company, who then became in a power position, who then had power over you, who could also continue to put out negativity about you. I don't know how you win in that position. How did you handle that?
I think it was...
And do you regret that?
Of course. I mean, mm-hmm. It was like your worst relationship, and yes. All of a sudden it's like out there for everybody to hear about. You know, he had told me that he was separated, getting a divorce, and it turned out to be a big lie.
Ellen, that's what they all say.
I know.
Yes.
Yeah, I now know.
You should have called me Ellen Powell.
I know.
The other reason I couldn't tell you. He's lying to you.
About everything.
Yeah,
so,
yes.
No, I didn't. Those were some red flags that I did not see.
Yes.
And so, of course, you're like, oh, this is why a series of bad decisions.
Yes.
You know, so I can't remember what your question around that was, because it's been like back in the
dark days. Do you look at that and say, okay, well, I didn't help myself there.
Right.
Because I think that that just adds to the narrative about you when people could say, come on, well, you know, she was involved with this guy. She wasn't doing her job. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. And I think it's comfortable for people to try to find a problem and to point like, that's the problem. It's not that the whole industry is broken. And yes, of course, like I regret having done that. But, you know, people make mistakes. People believe things that aren't true. And people end up, you know, people are people. So,
yeah, I also think we should point out that just because you were involved with someone, that doesn't take away from what appeared to be very legitimate concerns that you brought up about what was happening at the company. And I think that when you reached out to other women to confide in other women about this is happening to me, they also said, hey, this is happening to me too, about the way that they were treated.
Yeah.
I think it's very important that we establish that.
And also, I just want, for other women who are in bad relationships or who make mistakes, it is not your fault. Like, when these bad things happen to you, it's, you know, you made a mistake, but you don't deserve the repercussions. You don't deserve to be retaliated against. You don't deserve to be called terrible names, and you don't deserve to have a bad work experience.
So how did you decide ultimately that you were going to sue? Because once you decided to sue, then it became a whole different ballgame for you. What I marveled at is that you decided to sue, yet you continued to work there. You continued to come into work.
Oh, I know.
And I thought, how is she doing that?
Oh, my gosh. That was one of the hardest things. I think, you know, I tried to go through the different avenues. I had conversations. I wrote emails. Then I did a formal email to the whole managing partner team and the COO. And I, you know, so I went through all the channels.
You went
I knew.
To HR. And what did HR tell you?
So
before you decided to sue,
real
you
HR.
You complained to HR and they told you, you're the problem.
Right. We had the outside HR consultant said, you know, you are now the problem. And it was, so I was like, well, what is somebody supposed to do in this situation? And having heard from another partner that she had had a similar situation, that she had been told that, you know, being sexually harassed was something she should feel flattered by, and the idea that this could happen to other people, that it was not going to be fixed given their attitude, given their approach to the problem, I said, well, then we need to shine a light on it, and we need other people to tell them that this is not acceptable.
You tell a story, I'm trying to remember, that you went to one person, one boss, who said, well, maybe you should be a comedian. What was that story where you went to complain and he said, oh, you know, you're making too much of it. Maybe you should just be a comedian. Do you remember that?
You should go to stand-up comedy school,
yeah.
so that I could connect better with people, like people would like me more, and that, you know, I would have better interactions.
So you make the decision to sue, and you filed a lawsuit in 2012, and you write that you were painted as talentless, stupid, and greedy. And you went to other women to sort of suss out how they were feeling, and to a T, what did they tell you once you decided to sue? We're talking, by the way, to Ellen Powell, the author of the book Reset: My Fight for Inclusion and Lasting Change. What did they say to you?
So these other women who had similar experiences in other industries all said, don't sue. They had been through, and some of them had also gone to work after litigating, and you get shut out, right? People don't want to be seen with the person who's the problem.
Yeah, it's like,
and you're definitely a problem at that point.
You talk about walking into the office, the conversation stops, people start staring at you. What are you thinking during that time as you're walking into that building knowing you're going to be treated that way and ostracized?
Just get through as much as you can, right? And sometimes it would be, I can just focus on the next 30 minutes. I can't think about the fact that I've got six more hours. Just get through the next 30 minutes and then worry about the rest from there. But it was really like 30 minutes at a time.
And women told you it's not a fair fight, that even if you win, you could lose your reputation. And you still said, I'm going to do it.
I didn't think that it would stop otherwise. And I thought if I didn't say something, if I didn't stop it, then who was going to? Like, I was in a situation where I had the financial resources. I wasn't spending a lot of money, so I had, you know, enough to get through a litigation. I wasn't worried about my career. I thought, you know, I could always go back and write or do something else. And, you know, I thought I was tough enough to go through it.
So you filed a lawsuit, and you filed on what grounds exactly?
It was sexual discrimination and then retaliation for reporting the discrimination.
And this is what Kleiner Perkins said about Ellen Powell's lawsuit. It is without merit, and the firm is committed to supporting women and minorities in the tech industry. A statement from them. You go through the trial, and the trial is very ugly, I have to say. It's almost like your colleagues had selective amnesia when they took the stand, or selective memory, or flat-out lies in some cases. Talk to us about how you got through that while you sat on the stand listening to what you knew wasn't true.
I had been warned about that, too, from the woman and from my lawyers, that people turn on you, people... You know, and the dynamic is hard. You have a hugely powerful firm. You have people who are still working at that firm. What are they going to say? What are they supposed to say? And if they don't want to lie, then they're going to have to say they don't remember. Mm-hmm. And then you have people who have left who are still being funded or still looking for a good recommendation in a very small industry.
And they attacked you. They attacked your marriage. How did you and your husband get through that?
It was, you know, I think he was very supportive, and we just, you know, we just forged through. I mean, it was just a very, you know, it felt very natural. It was just something that we both believed in.
Mm-hmm. And the marriage is still fine today? The two of you are still fine today?
I don't really want to talk about my family.
Okay. All right. That's all right. Well, thanks. I can't say you're the mother of a young daughter. So you had a daughter while you were going through this. Can we talk about that?
I try to protect her privacy, right, too. I'm sorry. A lot of it is in the book, so.
Oh, I know. It is in the book. That's why I thought it was okay to bring it up. But that's all right if you don't want to talk about it. You go through the lawsuit, and then it turns out that you lose the lawsuit, which I thought, when I read that was a verdict, I remember all this in real time when this was happening. We were paying, a lot of us women were paying a lot of attention to Ellen Powell's trial. You go through the lawsuit, you lose the lawsuit, and you feel what after going through all of that?
There's a sense of relief that finally it's over. There was a sense of disappointment, but I could tell that it wasn't clear that I would win.
You said so, when the jury came back in the room, you knew.
When the jury came back, I knew for sure, because there were people, they couldn't meet my eyes. There was, you know, one person was crying. There was some, there was one man who looked really angry at me. And, you know, it was clear, like, oh, this is not going to be good for me.
Why do you think you lost?
I think the main reason was people did not believe that there was bias in tech. It was so, you know, just 5 years ago, but the image was that tech was this new world of innovation, and it was a meritocracy, and look at all these people going from, you know, zero to multi-billions of dollars who started out with an idea and were able to bring a phone to everybody's pocket. So it was very much a, you know, I think a perception thing. And everybody who did think there was bias in tech, there was a woman who was a software engineer who got very emotional when we were asking her questions to see her suitability for the jury, and they booted her because she thought there was bias. And everybody who thought there was bias in tech got booted. So the people who didn't really know what was going on in tech and didn't think there was bias and couldn't imagine it ended up being on the jury. There were a couple people who were more aware. But
in the end, it was your word against their word, and they came full force. Somebody said to you, they don't fight fair. Your lawyers, excuse me, put on quite a... You were pleased with their performance and how they handled your case.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, it was a very unbalanced effort in terms of resources, but you know, at the end of the day, we did the best that we could with what we had, and it wasn't fair. I think, you know, they had a whole PR team. They had a crisis management firm, Brunswick, who was there every day working the press, and the press was open to the idea that, you know, maybe I was just this person who was talentless. Maybe I was this person. It made for a much easier narrative to continue to cover all of the things that were going on in tech.
Ellen Powell, do you think you're talentless and greedy and thoughtless?
I hope not.
That was a joke, Ellen. We know that you're not.
Thank you.
We know that you're not. So as you sit here today, the lawsuit is over, yet you say in the book that you still have hope and you still believe in Silicon Valley.
I'm excited by the fact that now, I think through my story and all of these dozens of women who have
people
followed.
People are speaking up. Yeah.
People are speaking up. And more importantly, people are believing them. So finally, all of those messages are getting through and people are no longer saying, oh, that person must be talentless. Oh, that person, you know, made this mistake and now they don't deserve to be listened to. It's much more, oh, tech is really a broken industry. But the next step, the much harder step is like, how do we fix it and how do we move forward?
And close us out with how we fix it and how we move forward and your advice for women and minorities in tech.
Right. And it's, you know, you need to, like, there. I think it's focus on, like, the CEOs who need to actually be involved in inclusion to make your company inclusive. And they need to make sure that it's inclusive for all people, not just women. It's everybody, you know, and especially people who are from two different underrepresented groups. Like, those biases add up. It's not, it's a different experience. And make sure that it's comprehensive. So it's not just hiring people and bringing them in. It's making sure that they get promoted, they get paid fairly, they get the same opportunities, they are treated fairly when it comes to visibility and promotions.
Do you believe this is possible?
I do think it's possible. I've talked to some CEOs and they really want to make this happen and they're willing to use metrics and start tracking to see what demographics look like across all different areas, not just, oh, my company has 20% women, I think I'm okay and I'll keep trying to move. But, you know, who's at the leadership level? Who's in engineering? Who's in marketing? Who's in finance? Is every group representative instead of just like, oh, I've got everybody at the lower levels who never get promoted?
And what is Ellen Powell doing today?
I am doing a few things. I am working at...
She's smiling, people that are listening to
yeah.
us. Right. There's a good end to this story.
Yeah, which I think is important
yes.
for people to see that you can do this and get through. And so I'm working at a nonprofit foundation called the KPOR Center, where I'm the Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer, working with CEOs and startups to help make sure that they're diverse and inclusive. And I'm also doing a little bit of investing, 25% of my time as a venture partner at KPOR Capital. And then I started with these seven awesome women, a nonprofit called Project Include. And we work closely with CEOs to gather data and also to help them make their startups more inclusive. And our goal is to get benchmark data so that everybody can look and set goals and then push to achieve those goals of change going forward.
We thank you very much for joining us today. As I can tell you, I don't know much about the Silicon Valley world, but reading your book, I thought it was very eye-opening. And I also think it's very helpful for any women in particular who is thinking about going into Silicon Valley. You really tell your story, warts and all, and I thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. You can watch the full CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station.
Or you can stream it live on the CBS All Access app.
For more information, please visit cbsthismorning.com.